We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Hour number two, late night, right here on Sports Radio WEI. Room for you guys tonight at 617-779-7937. You text the program at 37937. You find me on Twitter, at Gilroy on Hoops, at Gilroy on Hoops. And I do want to continue discussing this Robert Kraft situation as really there's multiple bits of news that have come out in the last 48 hours. So on top of Robert Kraft sort of coming out of hiding and making himself front and center at the Celtics playoff game on Sunday afternoon. And by the way, a nationally televised game. So, you know, we all saw it on NBC Sports Boston here, but not just that. I was watching the national broadcast. So the whole country got to see Robert Kraft on the Jumbotron and the reaction from the fans.
Whether props to whoever thought about doing that before. Whoever's part of his PR group or anything, good for them.
I mean, I guess so. I mean, you know, part of me, and I heard Villani talking about this with Reamer, you know, sort of suggesting that maybe Robert Kraft should have whispered in Whit Grosbeck's ear to sort of tell him, hey, don't put me on the Jumbotron. But regardless, he was sitting with the owner of the Celtics right up front. He was going to be on national TV. Like, they can't hide the guy.
Just did the Patriots tribute, too. It's like...
Exactly. And they saved him for last. You know what I mean? Like, and he got a louder ovation than Larry Bird. So that's really all you need to know about how New England fans feel about it. However, you know, the New York Post ran with the story. And the New York Post and the comment section from New Yorkers, you know, I encourage Bostonians to read it because it's a good example of how the other markets feel about what's taking place here. And really the nature of the crimes in which Robert Kraft was charged with. Now, it's not going to be human trafficking. We know that for sure now. The judge has ruled that essentially, or the prosecutors have ruled that he's not going to face human trafficking charges. But regardless, that is the narrative that's been put out there nationally. So when you read these comments, you read them with that in mind. That's sort of the deep-rooted hatred right now that is brewing around the country for Robert Kraft. But one of the decisions that needs to be made here, and I would love to get some other people's opinions on this because I am so flippin' torn. So let's say hypothetically that the judge decides that, you know what, I'm going to allow the video evidence here because it's really all we have to go on. And by the way, we also learned tonight that the video evidence, the video cameras themselves were set up because the police, in conjunction with the spa owners, really, they faked a bomb threat to get everybody out of the building.
And then they hogwash.
And then they secretly went in and set up these cameras, which is just banana land to me when you consider the day and age in which we live in. But that's besides the fact. The big question, and I believe the Boston Globe sort of put this out there the other day, but the big question that we need to ask ourselves is Robert Kraft's video, is it pornography or is it evidence? Meaning, you know, is it something that should be consumed by people that are interested in seeing pornography? Is it going to wind up on YouPorn? Is it going to wind up on Pornhub? Is it going to wind up on all of those different websites out there that have got celebrity sex tapes? Is that ultimately where this thing is going to wind up? And should it? You know, is there any way to get it out of that realm? Because if it does wind up in that realm, here's my fear. When you think about something like the Pamela Anderson sex tape, right? That was 20 years ago that her and Tommy Lee had that sex tape. And it is still one of the most viewed videos on all these porn websites. People have a sick fascination with wanting to see celebrities in sexual acts. So that, to me, is really the sin of this whole thing. Whether it's evidence or porn, it's going to be considered porn, and there's no getting around that the moment it becomes public. So while it may be evidence to a judge, the moment you and I can view it on any website, then it becomes porn. And unless Robert Kraft intended to star in his own, I'm imagining, less than 2 minute long porno, then really, does he have a case here? Does he have a case here? Because, you know, Pamela Anderson, when she did her sex tape, She wanted it out there. She wanted the celebrity that came along with it. She wanted the attention that came along with it. Most of these celebrities that engage in making their own sex tape, and then, oh, it got out there. This private video between them and somebody that they love somehow made its way out there. No, it's all strategically done by Hollywood and by the agents to get their name out there. I don't think Robert Kraft is engaging in a HJ or a BJ to get it out there on Pornhub and to rack up the views. I really don't think that that's the case here. But people around the country, people outside of New England, they're calling this guy a legit pornographer. Not only are they calling him somebody that is engaged in human trafficking, not only are they calling him a rapist, by the way, is one of the words that's being thrown out there. Because if these Asian women were working against their will, so to speak, then regardless of whether they gave Kraft consent or not for the money, they're considering it rape in their eyes. This is how crazy stories like this get. And this is why I feel like Robert Kraft coming out of hiding was probably the best move. Regardless of what people think and say, I feel like it's the only way for him to sort of show, I don't feel like I did something wrong. Maybe he feels like, you know, personally, he could have made a better decision. You know, if he needs to have that sort of release, there's other ways to do it, whether he does it himself or has somebody else do it for him. There's other safer ways to do it where you don't wind up in a situation like this. And he absolutely learned that lesson. But as a man, every single one of us have done something stupid to try and get laid. Like, can we just be honest about this? Every man within this listening audience has done or said something stupid, something devious, something that they might not want to admit to their children in the effort of getting laid, all right? And if you deny that, then you're lying. We all know we've done it. And I feel like this country needs to get off their high horse and stop judging the guy because he's a guy that did something to try and get something. Now, if this thing did come down that he were financing some sort of a human trafficking operation, I'll be right there, first and foremost, front and center, telling you to lock him up. But that's not the case at all. Again, we talked about this briefly last week. These massage parlors are all over the country. All right, the next guy I'm going to take is Steve in Miami. He lives in Florida. He'll tell you, because he drives around Florida, these massage parlors are set up in every strip mall. I'm telling you right now, there's a Payless Shoe Source, there's a Publix, and then there's a Asian massage parlor right in between the two of them. So they're out there in broad daylight. That's where these activities are taking place. They're not taking place in somebody's hotel room or in the back room of some other business. All right, when today, there's actually pictures of his masseuse that made their way online. The Daily Mail published them. Not only did they publish her pictures, and by the way, Robert Kraft, you could have done better, all right? You're a man of means.
That answered my next question.
He could have done much better than a redheaded Asian, okay? He's a man of means. He could have done better, but that's besides the point. They also released her evidence of her certificate, I guess, for being a licensed massage therapist, and her ID. So she is a legitimate massage therapist. She did go to school for it, or she at least bought herself certification somehow, some way. You know what I mean? So it's not like he hired somebody off Craigslist to come to his hotel room and take care of him. He did say legit massage therapist. What took place after that is besides the fact.
Consensus of two adults? In reality?
That's the thing here, right? So there's a fine line, because how do you know if she was forced to do it by some owner holding something over her head or not? That's something that I don't even think the video evidence will ultimately tell us for sure. But all that being said, there's many questions that still need to be answered. And I think first and foremost, when it comes to this video, is whether it was legally obtained. And from what we learned today, and again, TMZ broke this in the last hour, there's somebody that was essentially a customer at the spa, but a customer that wasn't busted, a customer that's not facing any charges. He now knows, because he went to the spa sometime after, I believe it was January 18th, when the cameras were set up. So he knows that he was what he's calling illegally taped without his knowledge. So he is now suing the city of Palm Beach, because there's the likelihood that if Robert Kraft's video comes out, all the videos are coming out. I know that here in New England, we want to see the Kraft video. But there's probably, of the 200 men in Florida, there's probably 170 wives that are looking to see if this video evidence of their husband's coming out as well. You know what I mean? So this guy is suing, even though he's not facing charges. But with that lawsuit comes the knowledge we learned tonight, how these video cameras were set up. And to me, this is where things start to get really, really scummy and really, really shady. And maybe a police officer tonight can tell me something different. But to me, there was an operation, is the way they make it sound, between, you know, the police and the city of Palm Beach, where they essentially faked a bomb threat to get everybody out of the building while the police went in and secretly set up their surveillance cameras. And that right there, my friends, is exactly why Robert Kraft has hired two of the highest-priced lawyers that money can buy, and he's fighting this thing so hard. Because it just sounds backwards and dirty. And if it sounds backwards and dirty to somebody like me, I am sure that to Robert Kraft and to his high-priced attorneys, they're figuring pretty optimistically that they can do something legally about that thing never making its way out. So it is Sports Radio, WEI, room for you guys tonight at 617-779-7937. Let's grab another call here. Let's go to Steve. Steve's in Miami. Steve, you're next up here on WEI.
Wait, hold on, Patrick. Hey, don't count this time while I'm on WEI as part of my hour, okay, please? Thank you.
So am I wrong, Steve? Are those places not in every strip mall?
And nothing, I'm not anti-Asian and all that, but especially the Asian ones pop up all over the place. I mean, it's amazing. But, yeah, they're all over the place. And it's not just Miami. It's not just Florida. It's everywhere. So, but basically, the people who are really going against Kraft, let's face it, they're Patriots haters. Anything that they can find against the Patriots is going to. So we know that that's going to happen. I mean, if this was the Jacksonville Jaguars, owner, just like if it was Bill, the Jaguars owner, coach that videotaped, or Blake Bortles, who had deflated balls, which were never ever proved out there, folks, it never would have been a story. It's a story because it's the New England Patriots, the dynasty New England Patriots, and the rest of America is just tired of them, and anything that comes up, you know, Kraft could be shown as innocent. He'll never be innocent in the eyes of Patriots haters. Never, ever, ever, ever.
That's the thing. So, and I would love to, and it'll never happen, but just to sort of see the comparison, I would love it if he showed up to Game 3 in Indy, and they got a view of him in Indy on the Jumbotron, just to see the reaction of the fans there.
Yeah, it's crazy. But I'll call him because of Red Sox, if I may.
Yeah, what do you got?
Okay. I'm worried a little bit. I'll tell you why. Because the relief staff that has done a nice, credible job for the beginning of the year, they're going to be so overworked by the time summer comes around. And the thing of the relief pitchers beginning games and all that, apparently the Red Sox just don't have enough pitchers to go around. You know, they have five pitchers, and I don't know, none of them I know is hurt, and yet they're doing this Tampa Bay thing of let's start Walden, let's start Hector Velasquez, I should say, and all that. Meanwhile, by doing that, their arms are, you know, eventually, some of their arms are going to eventually go down. And I hope not, of course, but I just see it happening because they're going to be overused. Because, first of all, the starters aren't, you know, except for Price yesterday and all that, the starters aren't going deep into the games. So, and then you're going to starting them to have around three or four of them in a game. You know, it's ridiculous. I did not realize he was signed by Baltimore when the Marlins got rid of Dan Straley. I was hoping that the Red Sox would take a flyer on him, just like I was hoping that they would take a flyer on Gio Gonzalez. Right now, I don't know what they'll do if they have to bring up anybody, because their pitching in the minor leagues is nothing really great except for that one relief pitcher that was a draft pick last year. So I don't know. I don't like what they're doing with the bullpen starting games and then three of them coming out to perform and all that. I just think. And then tomorrow, or the next game, whenever it is, if the starting pitcher doesn't go deep, guess what? You're going to call on them again.
So, well, Steve, there's certain bit of irony here, because when you go back to spring training, right, the whole idea was that they were going to lighten the workload for the starting pitchers, essentially, because they all pitched into late October. You know, Nathan Eovaldi, David Price, Chris Sale, they were going to lighten their workload to keep them fresh for the second half of the season and into what they hope is a deep playoff run. But maybe that part of it will work out. But the irony here is that they're overworking their bullpen, which was supposed to be one of their areas of strength. So there is certainly a doomsday scenario in play where maybe 2 months from now, the starters have come around and they're pitching up to their level. But because you burned out the bullpen earlier on this year, you've got yourself the same situation, just reversed.
Exactly, and that's what I sort of worry about, because they don't, to me, they don't still have a deep bullpen. I first of all, I disagree with Alex Cora on one subject. We know that baseball players do things on habit more than maybe any other sport. You know, they know when they're going to bat. They know this. They know that. They know who, and here's where I'm going. They know when they're going to close. Right now, this closer by committee, okay, you're going to do it tomorrow. You're going to do it tomorrow. I don't think that's going to eventually work, because I think a pitcher's mind or a baseball player's mind has to think, okay, I'm the closer. This is it. I can figure that I'm going to be in the ninth inning instead of, okay, am I coming in the seventh? Am I doing this? Am I doing that? I just, it is such a routine. Baseball players get in such a routine.
Yeah, you're right. And with this team, Steven, I'm up against it. I love you, man, but I apologize. I got to get out of here. But you're right. So here's the thing. This team doesn't have a routine yet. The good news is it's Marathon Monday, right? And I keep telling myself that it's that early. We haven't even reached Easter yet. So there is still plenty of time for them to get this thing together. But you're right. They continue to trend in the wrong direction. And until we see a dramatic change here, a dramatic shift, then, look, this team is an imperfect bunch. And the bigger they deep this hole, the larger hole that they dig for themselves, the harder it's going to become to overcome all this. And, again, there is that doomsday scenario in play where eventually the starting pitching finally does come around. But by the time it comes around, you've overworked and overtaxed that bullpen. And that, to me, that would be the real sin of what Cora tried to accomplish throughout spring training by lightening the workload for guys like Chris Sale, David Price, Nathan Eovaldi, and company. So it is Sports Radio, WEI. Listen, if you're on the line, stay on the line. I promise I'll get to you. Coming up next year, though, we'll be joined by Chris Denari. He is the TV play-by-play voice of the Indiana Pacers. We'll sort of get an inside look at what the Pacers are collectively as a team as they are without their best player in Victor Oladipo. All that and more of your phone calls when we come back right here on Sports Radio, WEI. It is late night right here on Sports Radio, WEI. It's Patrick Gilroy with you as we'll make our way together up until 2 o'clock in the morning. As always, the number to join us here is 617-779-7937. You text the program at 37937. You find me on Twitter at Gilroy on Hoops, at Gilroy on Hoops. Is now the focus of this Celtics-Pacers series shifts to Game 2. We'll look to see if the Celtics can take a commanding 2-0 lead, or if the Pacers are able to come into Boston and essentially steal home court advantage away and head back down to Indianapolis with this thing tied up at 1 game apiece. Here to help sort of make us understand what this Pacers team has become in the absence of really their lone all-star, their best player in Victor Oladipo, and what this team is as a team. Because I tell you what, this team reminds me so much of what the Celtics were a couple of years ago when they were led by Al Horford and Isaiah Thomas, a team that plays like a team that is fun to watch, and a team where the fans really rally around that collective group of players. It is Pacers TV voice, play-by-play voice, Chris Denari, also a member of the Indiana Sports Writers and Sportscasters Hall of Fame, Chris. So talking to a Hall of Famer tonight, I guess I'm not worthy.
No, you're plenty worthy. No, I've had a disappointing day yesterday for the Pacers, but a good day today. My nephew lives here in Boston. He's a teacher, and he competed in the Boston Marathon today. So my brother flew in from Indianapolis, and we're able to have a little family time today. So all is good, today, and the team will practice tomorrow and get ready for Wednesday's game.
That's a very, very cool thing. I opened the show up at 10 o'clock today talking about the marathon a bit. I've run 3 marathons, but as a lifetime Bostonian, I've never run Boston. It's a different animal, a different beast altogether. So big congratulations goes out to him, and that's a big accomplishment.
Yeah, we're very proud of him. He was a high school athlete. He ran cross country and track at Boston College at BC, and like I said, is teaching here now. So it was fantastic. Definitely for me, with all the things that I've been fortunate enough to do in my career, this was definitely a bucket list item to check off not running in the Boston Marathon, but just watching. And it was fabulous to see the wheelchair entrance and then to see all the leaders. And I think my nephew, he was top 100, top 150. So it was really cool to see.
Chris, can you maybe help us understand a bit of a philosophical issue that we're having here in Boston? Larry Bird is beloved here. He's somebody that he will always have a place in Boston. He's always amongst our Mount Rushmore. But he's at the Garden, essentially representing the Pacers, isn't he?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. He is not. He's no longer the president of basketball operations, but he's still a consultant. He's still on the Pacers payroll, and he has an office in the practice facility in Indianapolis. So yeah, he's ours, as we like to say in Indiana. You know, just what a fantastic career. You know what he did here in Boston with three titles. One Coach of the Year honors when he coached back in the late 90s, 2000, and then was Executive of the Year. So we'll take credit for two of those three as far as Larry is concerned.
All right, Kenny, getting to these teams that are actually playing in this series on the court, I said it as I was introducing you, watching the Pacers and preparing sort of myself to talk about this series, there is, to me, the hallmarks of a real team here, and that's what the Celtics were in the earlier days under Brad Stevens. They were much more of a collection of players that became a great team as opposed to some great individual talent that struggled to become a team. So when you look at this Pacers team as they are collectively put together today, forgetting about the injuries, and you look at the last 13 years of broadcasting Pacer basketball, where does this particular group of guys rank as far as the group that they are and the team that they've been able to become despite the injuries?
Well, I think you hit on it. I think when you hit the word team, it is the epitome of a team. It's a great locker room. It's as good a locker room as I've been in my 13 years, dating back to last year when Victor Oladipo came. And I think a lot of the credit is to him because of the positivity he brought. And even without him, that seeps into the rest of the team. I mean, this is a team now without Victor that its margin of error is not as good as it was. And so they have to rely on each other. This is not a team that, you know, has players that can really break you down on the dribble. They've got to rely on setting good screens. They've got to get open. And, I think you saw, the first half, it was a gritty performance, and they held Boston to 38 points and had a seven-point lead. And then the third quarter, as we've seen, they've had some issues here late in the season, especially in third quarters against good teams. I remember back in the regular season, Philadelphia, Milwaukee, Toronto, they really buried themselves with performances like they had where they just can't execute on the offensive end. So that becomes a struggle at times just because, you know, taking Victor Oladipo off the floor, it allows Brad Stevens to put his best defensive player on Bojan Bogdanović, whereas, you know, prior to Victor getting hurt, Bogdanović might be seeing the second or third defender. So that's created some issues for the Pacers, but they are a great group of guys. They do remind me of those Boston teams when it was Isaiah Thomas and Avery Bradley and those types of gritty performances, and that's what the Pacers have to do to win.
So when you look at this particular trade and look at the trade now with some kind of revisionist history, of course, trading Paul George away for Oladipo and Sabonis, Pacers management took quite a bit of heat at the time, and the general sort of thought around the league was that they didn't get enough in return for Paul George. But now, looking at it a year and a half, 2 years later, and looking at the development of Sabonis and knowing what Victor Oladipo is capable of doing as the leader, the lone leader of a team, a team's best all-star player, a team's sort of go-to guy, have Pacers fans come around to this trade and now think that they got the best of the trade?
Well, absolutely, and let's put it into context, too. Paul George this year had a terrific year, maybe an MVP-worthy season. But the fact of the matter is, 2 years ago, he did not want to continue playing in Indiana. So you had to do something. And I think, you know, Victor came in having played at Indiana, somewhat beloved in the state. He's more beloved than ever. I mean, he has wowed the fans. And I think he has every bit the opportunity down the stretch to have the type of career and provides the charisma that a Reggie Miller had. Now, I'm not going to say he's Reggie Miller, but I'm just saying that's the impact he's had briefly in his 2 years. And then you throw in Domantas Sabonis, who's just 22 years old, I think the Pacers feel very strong about what they got in return for Paul George. Knowing that Paul George is a tremendous player, but Paul George didn't want to be in Indiana anymore, and so you had to do what you had to do, and I think the Pacers came out very well.
Now, you were the Pacers' play-by-play voice when Paul George got hurt. You were the play-by-play voice through his recovery and his eventual return to All-Star form. So now, talking to an audience of Celtics fans, where do you see Gordon Hayward in his comeback attempt compared to where Paul George was, and how much longer do you think it'll take Hayward to get to that level that George was able to eventually get back to?
Well, I've been very impressed. I had a chance to talk to Gordon after the last regular season game in Boston, and my link is for 17 years I was the radio voice of Butler before I got the job with the Pacers in 06. So I had left prior to, of course, Brad becoming the head coach and Gordon playing there, but I've known Brad a long time. Brad was an assistant at Butler, and so I've got that Butler tie. And I told Gordon then back in March that I could just see a big difference, and I watched him during the regular season. He's more than willing to take contact now. That's something that he just didn't have the confidence to do early in the season. So I think Boston fans here in the playoffs, hopefully for Pacers' sake, it's not too good. But I think what you're seeing from Gordon in the playoffs, which will carry over into next year, I think you will see more of what he was like in Utah, because he just has a whole lot more confidence in what his body can endure. And that's the biggest thing that I've seen, is that early in the season, taking contact was not something he wanted to do. Now he's taking contact like he did 1, 2, 3 years ago.
It is Sports Radio WEI. It is Late Night. My name is Patrick Gilroy. Joining me on the phone right now, Pacers TV play-by-play voice, Chris Denari. And Chris, one of the things I sort of wanted to get to here, again, you know, sort of comparing this Pacers team to Celtics teams of years past. Last year's particular group of Celtics was without Kyrie Irving, was without Gordon Hayward, and they made it all the way to Game 7 of the Conference Finals. And what wound up doing them in, and I saw some of this from the Pacers in Game 1, what wound up doing them in was their inability to have that one guy in a close game that you can continue to go to, that's capable of drawing fouls, getting to the free throw line, stopping momentum, and carrying the load offensively. Your Reggie Miller, your Paul Pierce, your Kyrie Irving, even in Al Harrington back in the day, somebody like that that is capable of carrying an offensive load. So when you look at this Pacers roster as it's constituted right now, let's say it's a close game in the fourth quarter in Game 2, which Pacer do you look at as the guy that's capable of carrying the Pacers to the finish line?
Well, they've had to rely. They've gotten some big shots down the stretch from Darren Collison, and they've gotten that from Bojan Bogdanovic, but it has to be a shared situation rather than what they had with Victor. And if you look back at Oladipo's numbers from a year ago, he was one of the top clutch players in the NBA. And before he got hurt, those numbers were also the same. I mean, go back to November when the Pacers beat the Celtics on Oladipo's three-point shot with, you know, a few seconds to play. Those are the types of plays that he's made on a regular basis. And then, you know, go back to March and the 114-112 Boston win. Who was it that made the big shot for the Celtics? The closer, Kyrie Irving. So that's something that the Pacers don't have. They've got to do it by committee. The ball probably ends in the hands of Bogdanovic. He's been more and more of the closer, but he's not somebody that can really break you down on the dribble like Victor Oladipo. And I think when it comes to closing time, you've got to have somebody like that. That's why a Jimmy Butler, that's why a Kyrie Irving, that's why a LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard. I mean, just go down the list. All of these guys that are good closers not only can hit the mid-range shot or hit the three, but they can get to the basket. And that's just something that the Pacers have lacked without Victor Oladipo.
You know, sometimes locally, and I'm sure this happens in Indy as well, we get caught up in our own sort of local takes on your local sports teams. And here in Boston, this was considered a disappointing season for the Celtics. Las Vegas had them pegged to go to the NBA Finals with 60-plus wins. It's actually the first year since Brad Stevens got here where they didn't reach a higher win total than they did the year before. It seems to have been a step back as opposed to a step forward, which we haven't seen under Brad Stevens' leadership here before, despite the fact that you did get two All-Stars, quote-unquote, returning here in Gordon Hayward and, of course, in Kyrie Irving. So from a national perspective, when you learned that the eventual playoff opponent was going to be the Celtics, what was really the first thing that came to mind about what this matchup was going to be like for the Indiana Pacers?
Well, it reminded me of last year because Indiana was the 5 seed, and who did they face in the first round? But Cleveland, who was the 4 seed. And think back to a year ago, most people thought that the Cavaliers should have been the 1 or 2 seed. And so from that standpoint, I think the Pacers are, you know, they face sort of the same dilemma. I mean, you could say, even despite the record that Boston has, which is 4th in the East, that they're worthy of being one of the top 2 teams in the East. I mean, just having watched the first round of the playoffs, and I know that, you know, Philadelphia had a big win tonight and scored 51 third quarter points, I still would put Boston as the favorite above Philadelphia just because they've proven it in past years. And also Toronto has sort of flailed away in the postseason. So, yeah, it was an underachieving year for the Celtics. They have more than enough talent to get to the NBA Finals. So from a Pacers perspective, it's almost like they're in the same seat that they were a year ago. They're facing a team that's much better than its record.
There's been a lot of talk around here about next year already. It's been going on all season. The rumors starting around the All-Star break. Is Kyrie Irving going to stick around? Will Danny Ainge trade all the young assets away for an Anthony Davis? Is there a sign-and-trade possibility for a Kevin Durant? All of those rumors have been swirling here for months. But from a Pacers perspective, I mean, really, when you look at this young team and you look at the development of a guy, again, you know, Bogdanovich is a good player. You look at guys like Collison, a good veteran player. The contributions that you guys have got from Matthews since really since you picked him up a couple of months ago, it's been surprisingly great. Now next year, you add a healthy Oladipo back to this roster. Next year, is the optimistic take really that the Pacers should be a top two, top three seed in the Eastern Conference once everybody is back and this collective unit takes the next step in their progression?
Well, the only problem is that you don't know who's going to be on the roster just because you have so many guys in the final year of their contracts. I mean, Thaddeus Young, Darren Collison, Bogdanovich, Corey Joseph, you know, veteran guys that you hope that you have two of them, maybe three of them back, but there's no guarantee because they'll all be unrestricted free agents. I think they all like playing in Indiana. They all like what they've been able to build. So, yeah, I think with your cornerstones of Turner and Sabonis and Oladipo, and again, we're not sure at what point next year he'll be back, you do have a good core. But to continue to move up in the East, you're going to have to get better because – you know, Philadelphia's loaded with talent. We don't know what Toronto, what will happen there, what Kawhi Leonard's going to do. You know, the good thing for Boston is every year, I mean, I go back 3-4 years ago, think when they had Bradley and Thomas and all those guys, and now they have a completely different team, you know, they continue to win. So a lot of it this is going to be a fascinating summer. I mean, we have a great next 2.5 months of NBA playoffs. But the draft and free agency heading into 1920 are going to be very, very interesting, and I'm sure the Pacers will be a part of that.
All right, two more quick ones from me, Chris. So first, you were there at the Garden for Game 1, a pretty cool event, at least locally. You get on the Jumbotron, of course. Larry Bird gets his ovation. Robert Kraft gets featured, and it was really his first public appearance since everything went down with him. He gets a massive standing ovation, was actually measured to be louder than the one that Larry Bird got. What were your thoughts when you saw 20,000 people standing and cheering for Robert Kraft?
I chuckled a little bit. I mean, I think we were doing the game, and so I saw it. I don't know if we were in a commercial break or if we just come on, and we didn't even reference it. I mean, we saw it up on the big screen. I'm not sure what I would have said. I guess I would have just said there's Robert Kraft, the owner of the New England Patriots. But, you know, he's the owner of a team. What have they won? 5, 6?
Yeah, six.
Yeah, sometimes you lose track. They've been so good. but it was interesting. I mean, it was interesting to see them put Larry Bird up and then to put Robert Kraft up.
Yeah, a little compare and contrast there, I guess.
Yeah.
All right, last one for me. So going into this series, you speak to a local audience. Did you pick the Pacers or the Celtics, and what was your final number? How many games?
I thought the Pacers could win it in 7, and you know, that's still possible. You've got to win one on the road and then be able to hold serve at home. I thought they were in a nice position in the first half. I thought they did a really good job in forcing Boston into some turnovers that they don't normally make. And so they've just got to find a way to be better offensively. They scored 8 points in the third quarter. I just watched Philadelphia score 51 tonight in the third quarter. So I think that's an outlier, but it is a credit to Boston. I thought Brad made some great adjustments at halftime heading into the third quarter. But I still think this is a series in my book that the Pacers can win. I know they're not the favorite. I know Boston has more talent. But I've been a big believer in what I've seen from this team this year, and I still think they have a shot.
All right, Pacers TV play-by-play voice, Chris Denari. Chris, thanks for staying up late. I know it's not easy here on late night. I really appreciate it.
All right, thanks.
All right, there he goes. Chris Denari from Fox Sports Indiana. He's their TV play-by-play voice, been doing it for 13 years. Also a member of the Indiana Sports Writer and Sportscasters Hall of Fame. Also did 18 years doing the Fever, the WNBA team in Indy. So yeah, he's got quite the resume, and he says it's a good thing that his local broadcast didn't pick up on the Robert Kraft standing ovation, because, quite frankly, he doesn't know what he would have said. It is Sports Radio WEI. My name is Patrick Gilroy. When we come back, we'll get back to your phone calls. All right, I want to continue with both the Celtics-Pacers conversation. I find it interesting that Chris is still confident that the Pacers can come back and win this series in seven, which means they'll have to win one at the Garden. And it could be a game seven. I mean, could a lower seeded team really win a game seven at the Garden? And of course, continue our Robert Kraft discussion here. Good move, bad move, indifferent when it comes to standing up and really taking all the adulation, taking all the love, taking all the applause, and getting a louder ovation than Larry Bird. Was that the right move to make? We'll talk about that and more with you when we come back right here on Sports Radio WEI. It is Sports Radio WEI. It's late night. Patrick Gilroy here with you guys as we make our way together up until 2 o'clock in the morning. The number to join me here tonight is 617-779-7937. You text the program at 37937. You find me on Twitter at Gilroy on Hoops, at Gilroy on Hoops. And again, a big thank you goes out to Pacers TV play-by-play voice, Chris Denari. He is their version of Mike Gorman. He's been with them for 13 years doing it. And he had some really good stuff. So I'm sure that the playback will be available on WEI.com as well as the radio.com app tomorrow. And Chris holding firm with his prediction that the Pacers wind up beating the Celtics in seven games. Also, I found it funny. I asked him about Robert Kraft and the ovation to sort of get an outsider's perspective on, you know, what he thinks about an entire city backing and celebrating a guy that just got pinched not once but twice soliciting prostitution. And his answer was great. He said, look, he was aware of it when it happened, but it wasn't a part of their local broadcast, so he was grateful that he didn't have to talk about it. I found that interesting. And you know what? I found that actually refreshingly true, because it would have put him in a very awkward position. And as somebody that's got to fill, you know, 4 hours on the radio multiple times a week, I got to tell you, we all get put in awkward positions. You know, when Reamer said the thing about Tom Brady's kid, that was an awkward position because we weren't supposed to talk about it, but everybody wanted to talk about it. You know, these things happen. Kirk Minahan, when he was no longer a part of the morning show, everybody wanted to talk about it. So we all get put in these awkward positions, and I feel like Chris, he was grateful that he was given the out by his production team not making that a part of their broadcast. So again, catch that podcast version of that conversation coming up tomorrow on WEI.com and the radio.com app. My name is Patrick Gilroy. Now that we're done with Chris, there's plenty of room for you guys tonight at 617-779-7937. I did want to get back to the Robert Kraft conversation, because again, you know, I find the whole thing fascinating. There's so many different elements of this case and elements of Robert Kraft and how he's handling this thing on a personal level. You know, I heard Vellani say something earlier where he thought originally that Robert Kraft might take this as an opportunity to sort of step away from the Patriots a little bit, meaning maybe not be so visible all the time, maybe start to hand the reins over to Jonathan a little bit and not be the guy that is there seen in their luxury booth week in and week out, being essentially the face of the Patriots, the point man for the New England Patriots. And I couldn't have disagreed more. Like, I thought from day one that knowing Robert Kraft's personality, knowing his demeanor, that he was going to double down here and he was going to use this as an opportunity to really cement himself as the legendary figure that he is here in New England. But is it fair? Is it fair, and are we doing the right thing, or are we being hypocritical? And that's really the part about this that I would love to get into with you guys here coming up in the back half of the program. Because on one hand, I get it. On one hand, emotionally, if I were in the building as a fan, I would want to stand and cheer. I would want to root for this guy that has helped architect this entire operation, getting six Super Bowls here. And really somebody who comes off as a very likable guy. You know, for a billionaire, for a billionaire with a B, he comes off as a very likable guy. He's always very generous with his time, generous with his money. He backs the right foundations. He backs the right charities and seems like a genuinely good, fun person. And I do. I love the fact that he's 77 and he's unapologetic about, you know, wearing Air Force Ones with his suit and dancing, you know, hip hop dancing and hanging out with hip hop artists and dating a girl literally, you know, half his age. I love all that about him.
Sounds like the dream.
Well, he's living his best life at 77 years old. You know, he knows that nobody gets out of this thing alive. Everybody goes down no matter how much money you have, no matter how healthy you are at that advanced age. So he's smart enough to know that, you know, because nobody gets out of this thing alive, he is going to enjoy his life, enjoy his money to its fullest. However, I do think that there's a bit of hypocrisy here as well. Because let's be honest about this. If this were another owner, let's say this were Mark Cuban, another equally high-profile owner that gets caught up in a prostitution sting and gets caught soliciting not once but twice within a 24-hour period. And let's say the Celtics were playing the Mavericks in the finals and Mark Cuban was at the Garden. What kind of a reaction do you think would give Mark Cuban in that situation? Do you think we'd be calling him a scumbag? Do you think we'd be calling him the lowest of the low, a criminal, maybe a rapist? Look at that. That was crafty. Do you think we'd be calling him all the names in the book? Do you think that we would treat him like a scumbag? Do you think that we would consider him a lowlife? Do you think that we would think differently of him because he represents a different color, a different city, a different team than ones here in our own backyard? And that's the hypocrisy of this whole thing. And anybody that tells me that they would have been giving Mark Cuban a standing ovation a la Robert Kraft, I feel like we're lying to ourselves. So that's the only part of this that it sits a bit uncomfortably with me, is that now I am a parent. And if I was at the game with my 11-year-old daughter, she's not oblivious to what's happened to Robert Kraft. It's been all over the internet, all over the news. You know, she checks her social media. It's there. There's no getting around or away from this. And if she saw her dad stand and cheer for a guy that got caught busted, you know, soliciting a prostitute not once but twice, I would feel like a total, total hypocrite. So is there a level of hypocrisy to our forgiveness and celebration of Robert Kraft before this case has even been heard, let alone been done? You know, it's one thing if this case were over with and Robert Kraft were found innocent, then maybe I could justify it to my daughter and say that, you know, this whole thing was a sham and sort of be done with it. But we're not at that point yet. We're at the point where essentially everybody agrees that he solicited not one but two hookers. That's the deal here. Like, that's what he absolutely did. Now, is he guilty of human trafficking? No. But how do I explain it to my daughter in a way that it makes sense for her to watch her dad stand and cheer for a guy that used women for their bodies not once but twice and paid them for their bodies not once but twice, and in the same time, you know, try to teach my daughter about self-respect, self-esteem, what her body is and who is allowed to see it, who is eventually allowed to touch it, and really for her to protect that body and honor her body because eventually it is a gift that is very special that she will eventually give to her husband one day, right? That is the conversation that you have with a tween and a teen about sex. And on the other hand, you want to stand and cheer for a guy that walked into a massage parlor and essentially bought it not once but twice, got caught not once but twice, and bought it like he was buying a bag of chips. You know, and that totally... you know, gets in the face and is a complete 180 from the lessons we try to teach her. So for kids that are aware, that tween to teenage, if you were at the Garden last week, if you were at the Garden over the weekend, and you stood up and you cheered with your tween or teen teenager there with you, I would love to talk to you and sort of understand how you justified standing and cheering for a guy that got caught doing what he did with your tween or teen right next to you. So we'll continue to try and make sense of the Robert Kraft situation, and I'll continue to tell you guys about the story that's breaking tonight on TMZ. A guy that got, well, he didn't even get busted, But a guy that knew that he was caught on camera because the cameras were installed on a certain date, he knew that he visited the parlor after that date. He is now suing the city of Palm Beach. I love this.
I think he's more scared about the wife.
He wasn't arrested. He wasn't charged with anything. He could just walk away from this no problem. But he's suing the city of Palm Beach because somewhere out there is a videotape of him participating in and or purchasing a massage with extras. Let's put it that way. So we'll talk about that and a whole hell of a lot more. Continue our Pacers, Celtics conversation, start to work in some Bruins and Red Sox as well. All that and your phone calls when we come back right here on Sports Radio WEI.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.